Okay, today we're at Deuteronomy, of course, and we're going to be in the 11th chapter, and only 11th chapter. I was going to do the 12th one, but the 12th one is just too massive, and so we'll take a shorter one today on just the 11th chapter of Deuteronomy.
Therefore, you shall love the Lord your God and keep his charge, his statutes, his judgments, and his commandments always. Know today that I do not speak with your children who have not known and who have not seen the chastising of the Lord your God, his greatness and his mighty hand and his outstretched arm, his signs and his acts which he did in the midst of Egypt to Pharaoh king of Egypt and to all his land, what he did to the army of Egypt, to their horses and their chariots, how he made the waters of the Red Sea overflow them as they pursued you, and how the Lord has destroyed them to this day. What he did for you in the wilderness until you came to this place, and what he did to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, the son of Reuben, how the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, their households, their tents, and all the substance that was in their possession in the midst of all Israel. But your eyes have seen every great act of the Lord which he did. Therefore you shall keep every commandment which I command you today, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land which you cross over to possess, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord swore to give your fathers, to them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. For the land which you go to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you sowed your seed and watered it by foot as a vegetable garden. But the land which you cross over to possess is a land of hills and valleys, which drinks water from the rain of heaven, a land for which the Lord your God cares. The eyes of the Lord your God are always on it, from the beginning of the year to the very end of the year. And it shall be that if you earnestly obey my commandments, which I command you today, to love the Lord your God, and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. And I will send grass in your fields for your livestock, that you may eat and be filled. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, lest the Lord's anger be aroused against you, and he shut up the heavens so that there be no rain, and the land yield no produce, and you perish quickly from the good land which the Lord has given you. Therefore you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, that your days and the days of your children may be multiplied in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, like the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you carefully keep all these commandments which I command you to do, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to hold fast to him, then the Lord will drive out all these nations from before you, and you will dispossess greater and mightier nations than yourselves. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even to the western sea, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand against you. The Lord your God will put the dread of you and the fear of you upon all the land where you tread, just as he has said to you. Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I command you today, to go after other gods, which you have not known. Now it shall be, when the Lord your God has brought you into the land which you go to possess, that you shall put the blessing on Mount Gerizim, and the curse on Mount Ebal. Are they not on the other side of the Jordan? For the setting sun in the land of the Canaanites who dwell in the plain opposite Gilgal, beside the terebinth trees of Morah. For you will cross over the Jordan and go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and you will possess it and dwell in it. And you shall be careful to observe all the statutes and judgments which I set before you today.
What is it that you see in this particular chapter? Remember what was said in the previous chapters up to this point. Because it's very important that we kind of see a pattern of what Moses is trying to, not trying, what Moses got across, whether received or not.
Well, one thing that I think is interesting here in chapter, in verse 14, it talks about the grain and the wine and the oil, which is the Kiddush observance.
I also found interesting, it's in the very, let's see, verse 2 says, "Know this day that I am not talking with your sons who have not known and who have not seen the discipline of the Lord your God." And then he goes on to talk about some of the events as examples of his discipline. But later on he says, "You are to tell your sons." And then he talks about the going by the way and so on. So I just find it very interesting that God, through Moses, is basically saying, "I'm talking to you, so you can tell your sons and daughters." I just find that interesting that he's not going over their heads in a sense. He's saying, you're still the parents, and right, these are things I'm telling you, and you need to be the ones to teach your sons and daughters. Yeah. I just find that really cool.
One way over there. Okay. Daniel?
Regarding the topic that Tammy had just mentioned, I read an article sometime earlier this week regarding an analysis or a survey of, you know, people who leave, you know, God and just go on their own business because they have no interest in what they were raised in. And it struck me as I was reading that they were talking to youth pastors and talking to the various teachers and then talking to the people, of course, who had left and their parents and their siblings who stayed behind and blah, blah, blah. And it struck me, it's like, wait a minute, I see an acute pattern problem here. And one of the biggest problems is that they were describing what their experience was like in their various organizations. And it is, the child is brought in with the parent, and the parent says, okay, go to the Sunday school for whatever it is, go to the Sabbath school, now here's some things to color, here's some things to do, to occupy the kid.
Yeah.
Keep him busy. It was God commanded us that you are to teach your children, not hire someone else to teach them for you.
Correct.
Or pass them on to somebody else who's smarter than you are. That's not how it's supposed to work.
That's not how it works.
Because how smart somebody else is. Your job is to teach your children. Because if you don't, the child looks at you and tries to mimic their parents, not try to mimic the teacher who instructed them. It's interesting that, as Tim pointed out, that's most telling them the exact same thing. This pattern is supposed to be set. It is you to your child, not you to somebody else's child. Or your child to somebody else who you think is smarter, knows more, or has more degrees than you do.
It's like he didn't say, I want you to, when you go into the land, then first thing, that's priority number one, is to make sure you establish some schools and get some teachers out there, get them educated, then they will teach your children. And you don't have to do it. Your business is doing what? I don't know. Seed on the ground, I guess, put water on it. all of us recognize this, our society and our country has started out with, not our country alone, but it's been in time and before even the existence of our country, where people always have somebody who is to teach their children rather than they teach their own children. And it's kind of pretty strong evidence here, and this is not the only chapter that says it, right? We see it throughout the entire Torah. And it's really hard for us to look and say, well, yeah, but I don't have the time. Really? Yeah, because see, in our world, getting on the subject matter here, we feel that we need to spend 4 hours or 5 hours or 6 hours in thorough sitting down and table and doing this and doing that, teaching them this, teaching them that, while they're doing the studying in the book, you know, and you're sitting there waiting for them to, did you get the answer right? Do you know what you're talking about? No? Or you say, wait, and then they fill out the piece of paper, and they give it to you, and you say, well, okay, that's good. No, it means you are directly involved. And here Moses is saying something, and she brought this, that was easy to bring it out. I am not talking to your children. They don't exist yet. I'm talking to you. And he says, now I want you to keep in mind many things. But the first verse is very fascinating. We know the book of Deuteronomy is very in-depth, shall we say, and repetition of, but the 12th chapter goes in more detail. This reason why I'm not going to do it today. Next week I'll have it, or maybe 2 weeks I'll take it in a row. He says, thou shalt love thy Elohim. And remember I talked about the 6th chapter, how that word, thy Elohim, is repeated many, 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 many times in the 6th chapter. Moses is hammering in. Because of why? They're ready to go into where? The land. And is the land holy? No. Their function is to make it holy. And the 12th chapter goes into detail of how to do this. We will talk about that next week. And so as the very first thing says, and keep his charge. Not your charge. Not Moses' charge. Not the charge of the community. Not the charge of the king. Not the charge of you know, somebody else, but God's charge. Now, the word charge, interesting word. I'm using Old English here for some of you who don't know that. And basically it says, like, you're keeping his guard. You're keeping his functions. You're keeping his obligations. Now, God made an obligation to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? And so we don't have to worry about that one. No, wait a minute. He says, I am giving it unto you now. This is my charge. I'm giving it unto you. When you go into the land that I promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this is what you're going to do. To continue on with my charge, my obligation. And you continue on with my service. And that translated the word is that you'll keep my watch. Now, when you think about watching, what do you think about watching? You got to do something with your eyes to see things, right? Focus in on what? What he is watching. And we are to do what with it? Take responsibility. And it's very fascinating. Of course, it says his statutes, not Israel's statutes, not Jewish statutes, not Goyim statutes, but his statutes, his judgments, his commandments. Nobody else's. And so we have to learn, we want to know about God, we care about God, we want to know about God, and sometimes in our daily way of life, we don't really concentrate upon or even have in our mind that we are going to take responsibility of his obligation, take responsibility of his watch, take responsibility. How do you do this? Simple. By his statutes, by his judgments, and by his commandments. I find that very fascinating. And he says, verse 2, his greatness and his mighty hand and his stretched out arm. Remember, I began telling you for quite some time now, but when we look at the Torah, we look at the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, we sometimes, because human beings do this, we look upon what the people did or did not do. We look at where the people, what the people said, and what the people's actions were. But the story of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy is not about people. It's about God. What he does. And you know, mate, you know, we went through this thing. Passover's coming up pretty soon. I'll roughly go through, again, those places they met all the way up into Shavuot. And the names of the places, and it was God who sent them there. And we've already read from last week, I have deliberately made you thirsty. I have deliberately made you sick. I have deliberately made you hungry. Why? To find out what you're made of. If this is how God works. This is Him. He says, I am doing this to you and nobody else. Every place, remember, they ever camped was where the cloud went. And the one time, and He speaks about it, I think, in this chapter, when the cloud said no, or didn't go there, some decided to go there anyway to Israel, or not the land there, and they were defeated by the enemy, killed out. So it's really kind of heavy for us to look back and say, okay, God, where's your mercy? Why did you protect them? Because that's not my obligation. That's my charge. My charge is not to protect them. Oh, well, that's pretty interesting, isn't it? So we read about His statutes, His charge, and so on and so forth. And in verse 2, it says, His greatness, His mighty hand, His stretched out arm. And verse 13, and His miracles, and His acts, and what He did. So everything we read in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy is what the functions of the Creator of heaven and earth does. It's a function of what the Creator of heaven and earth says. It's a function of what the Creator of heaven and earth implements into our lives. So I find it very fascinating. He's repeating this at this time now. They're ready to go in the promised land. And Moses is ready to die. And he's emphasizing, before we get to chapter 12, we've gone from chapter 1 all the way up to this point now, and this continual bombardment, shall I say, from Moses saying, your Elohim, your Elohim, your Elohim, nobody else's. Don't answer to anybody else's Elohim. Answer to yours. His statutes, His laws, His judgments, His charge, His mighty hand, His mighty work, because He is testing you out. And at this particular point in time, the people of Israel have been tested for 40 years. Apparently, when you really look back on it, they passed the test. Now they get to go. What did they have to pass? Well, he says this, okay? And Tammy brought this out about the chastisement, the correction, the punishment, and the many times that he had to go through a devastation and lost an awful lot of lives to hear correction and correction and correction. Why did he do this? Because he hated them, despised them, because they were stiff-necked. Oh, yeah, they were stiff-necked. That's not unusual. People are stiff-necked. Human beings are stiff-necked. That just means you don't bow your head in humbleness. He read a chapter of their in Proverbs that when you make a stupid pledge, what are you supposed to do? Get out of it? No. Humble yourself quickly. Maybe the one that you made a pledge to, because of your humbleness, will release you of it. Instead of going arrogantly, find a lawyer, sorry, find a judge, find some law written somewhere in the books, which were how many laws in the United States of America? I think we can't even talk about them, too many. He said, just make it short and quick and to the point. Go there. You made a foolish thing. Get out of it. How? Humility. Admit your stupidity. Admit your ignorance. Admit whatever you did was the stupidest thing I ever did. And just say it. And people actually will respond quicker. They will respond quicker when someone apologizes, whether it's a public official having to apologize for his or her conduct, and they just openly are apologizing, and they would say, admit it was a stupid, idiotic thing, they'll never do it again. And they only ask that you give them a second chance, or a third chance, whatever you people call it. And lo and behold, the people will say, okay. We had a former president who has been if he had come out and said what he did, the American people would have had mercy upon him. If he just humbled himself on his stupid actions, he would remain president of the United States rather than being evicted out. That was very evident in the overall people, and then they surveyed the American people. But he just refused to do so, and therefore, that was it. Goodbye. Like telling them that you've gone, now you're going to go to a place unlike the place of Egypt. What was the place of Egypt? Where they were at? What was the area? Goshen. The most luscious land. It still is today. The best agricultural land in Egypt. It is a lot of crops grow there. Great crops grow there. How is it done by? The River Nile. All right. Now they're going to go someplace else where, you know, it's interesting here. It says, where you sowed thy seed and watered it with thy foot, making the trenches, making the works, as a garden of herbs. I mean, it's a wonderful place there, the best place. I sent you the best place. But now you're going to go someplace else. You're going to go where there is hills and there's valleys. And guess what? You're going to have to drink the water that comes from the Nile. Oh, no. You have to drink the water that comes from the Mississippi. No. You have to drink the water that comes from Euphrates. No. Where do you drink the water? That which comes down from above. I will supply you with water. The land needs rain in order for it to survive. That's a very unnatural for us to think about that. We'll put irrigations in. We'll bring a big, a reservoir, trap the water. So we can always have water. I'm not saying it's bad. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying it's kind of interesting here where it says, you will get rain from heaven. I will send it down, says the Lord. And it says, thy Elohim cares for you, for a land which thy Elohim cares for. I mean, remember he said earlier? What did he say earlier? Remember what he said earlier about the land? You remember what he said? You don't remember what he said? I can't stand it. It's too filthy. I want you, before I go in there, I want you get in there and clean it up. Then I'll go in. That's kind of a, look. Now, let's go back to verse 1. You take his charge. Oh. Did Moses take the charge of God when he led the people out of Israel? Yes, he did. Of course, he listened to the creator of heaven and earth before he did anything. That's very important to listen to him before you take, oh, I'm going to take charge. No, no. You take his charge. Now, what do you want me to do? Okay. I'll do it. There's some prophets. I can't remember what prophet. I think it was Isaiah. Anyway, the one that burnt his mouth. I will do it. Ah, oh, down comes the angel. Oh, you can take charge? Coal. Which angel, by the way? It's all there. It's kind of comical. He took a pair of prongs. He got down there, got that hot coal, the prongs, and he took that prong with the hot coal and touched the guy's lips with it. Woo! The angel wouldn't even touch the coal. it's not going to affect the angel, but it's just kind of less us to know, picturing, we're not talking here a piece of charcoal here. I'm going to clean up your mouth. Before I can put you in charge, I have to clean up your mouth. What comes out of your mouth is not my word. What comes out of your mouth is your words. Now, Doug, we can get a picture. Oh, he was a filthy, nasty speaking. No. His words were of himself. Oh, stop talking about you and yourself. Now, clean it up. Get that which is holy in you, and talk about my charge. He said to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. That's repeated in the previous chapter. We went through that one already. And here's a quote. Well, he doesn't say he quoted it, but verse 11, 14, and 15 had to come from the Creator. It says, I will give you rain in your land in due season. Oh, really? You're going to a place that has what? Oh, there's hills and there's valleys and there's, you know, it needs rain. And now he says, I'm going to give it to you in its season. Now, we all have learned, we're not talking about summer, winter, spring, and fall. There's only three seasons spoken in the Bible, right? It's the harvest seasons. It's three harvest seasons a year. One at the beginning of it and one at the end of it. Deuteronomy goes in more clarification of that later on. And he said, I will send grass. I will send grass in the field for thy cattle that thou may eat and be filled. That you may eat and be filled. Wait a minute. Doesn't he mean that your cattle may be eat and they may be filled? No. I'll send the grain. I'll raise up that green, the grasses, for your cattle that you will have something to eat. Isn't that interesting? And be full, satisfied. There's a lot of things here God is saying, right? But he brings in something there. Verse 16 is very, very interesting. He says, take heed. What do you think that word means? Is it a warning? Pay attention, okay. Beware, okay. Ellie?
It's really easy when things go well and you have your crops and you have plenty to eat and you have your house to think that you did it. I worked really hard, and that's what I accomplished. It's God.
Yeah.
I willed it, and it happened. That's what I was thinking.
I willed it, and it happened, right. Okay, I want to backtrack just a little bit here so you understand what I think I see. Maybe you will see it as well, or maybe you have a different viewpoint. But temporarily remove 14th and the 15th verses, because those are not the words of Moses. He's quoting the words of God. In the 13th chapter, to serve him with all thy heart, all thy soul. Drop down to 16. Take heed, in Hebrew means keep, guard, observe yourselves, that your heart be not, and there's this word deceived. In Hebrew, very fascinating, doesn't mean we're deception. And let not your heart be open and be wide unto another Elohim. Oh, now we have a different picture. Don't keep trying. No. Don't heed, that's true. Don't observe, yes. Don't guard yourself. Talk about his heart, right? The first 13, right? Your heart and your soul, two things you are to guard and to take heed in. And now he comes and says, this is Moses talking now, to yourselves, that your heart be not spacious. Be open to different Elohims, to different ways of life, to different doctrines, to different belief systems, to different character, to different whatever it is. Don't say, well, you know, I'm going to hear this person out, and I'm going to hear what this religious person's belief out, or I'm going to hear what this doctrine is all about, because I want to really understand them. Oh, wait a minute. All of a sudden there's destruction here. God says, take heed, right? Moses, through God, says, take heed. Don't be an open person. What does that mean? One is to guard, and the other one says, do not open. Do not open your heart. Very fascinating terminology, isn't it? Start thinking about this. In our world, in our life, we are surrounded by every whim of doctrine. Apostle Paul said that, right? What happens when you're tossed about with every whim of doctrine is because your heart is open to another teaching rather than the teachings of the Creator of heaven and earth. Yes?
Is that the same as they say, have an open mind for...
Same thing. Same thing. I'm going to have an open mind and try to understand... I'm sorry, what?
Buddhism.
Oh, Buddhism. Okay, I'm thinking something a little more gross than that for sake of open-mindedness. Here's this book. I'm judging it by its cover. It's got a very sexy thing on it. I'm going to open it up and have my mind and my... I'm going to look into it to see if there's anything there of value. Right? And that's the gut stuff, right? We know that. No, just burn it. You know, get rid of it. Don't even look at it. Yes, sure, Jeff.
Everything is permissible, but not everything is profitable.
That's one of them that's not profitable. But, you know, it's interesting. You see it written here, and you hear the Apostle Paul saying the same thing in different words. Yes?
I'm reminded of the bumper sticker Coexist, where it has all the symbols of different religions and...
I'm sorry, I missed...
There's a bumper sticker. It says Coexist, and it has all the symbols of different...
Oh, that's right. Sheesh. We won't go there. Okay. Then he comes in, verse 17. Now, if you have your head in that direction, remember, previously he said, I will give rain from heaven. Now, if you start helping your heart being opened up and you want to widen it, you want to have more understanding of others, which will actually... turn you or depart you from God. Now he says, verse 17, he shuts up the heaven that there will be no rain. Now, Daniel went through, that was a couple weeks ago, I can't remember right offhand, where David, there's no rain for 3 years. And, I happened to another prophet later on. There was no rain for 3 years. And then during the time of Joseph, there was a drought that lasted for 7 years. I think it was 7 years, maybe not. And then Abraham, there was a drought. Oh my. I have heard that people have said, it's a weather pattern. It's a cycle in the weather pattern. Okay. Who controls the cycle of weather pattern? Now, we don't believe this in our society today at all. We just believe, because of global warming or global freezing, man is doing something, and man is causing everything to take place, and the reason why there's no rain is because man. The reason why there's too much rain is because of man. Now, pay attention. God is a liar here. Right? He's downright a liar here. And he says, I'm not going to send the rain. Oh, wait a minute. You have no control over that. You have no jurisdiction over this world. You have no jurisdiction over the weather. You have no jurisdiction. It just happens by happenstance. It just, coincidence. It's a coincidence. It's happened because of, an earthquake happened over here and caused over there and tornado over here and a volcano over there. He had nothing whatsoever, God, to do with it. Oh, wait a minute. Didn't he say earlier? Do you remember what he did, verse 4, unto the army of Egypt? Unto their horses? To their chariots? How he made the water of the Red Sea to overflow? Them, as they persecuted after you? Now, I know some of you have probably seen this thing on History Channel. They always try to bring it up sometimes, just happenstance, something happened over here, happened over there. And, of course, it wasn't God that did it. It was just, you know, the way the world is turmoiling and turning into its next cycle of evolutionary concept. Making God a joke. Now, what's so bad about it? By the way, Jeff, thank you for sending down that article. I have not read it completely, but I would read it. And it's very fascinating how many in the Christian world, I'm real upfront with you, a lot of them believe half evolution and half God. God started, now everything's evolving from that point, and God has no control, no jurisdiction. He is out of his realm of superiority, or out of his realm of, he's not in charge anymore. He's not kept his charge anymore. You know, he's given it up. Well, it's really hard to accuse God of those things. Therefore, verse 18. Therefore shall ye, all of them, put up these, my words, Moses talking, in your heart, in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand and a frontlet to your teeth. Now, your eyes. I hadn't looked at this thing because I've ever heard the saying of bonding. And we always think about being wrapped, being here, being there, you know, wrapped around your head. Now, you heard me talk about this last week. But I want to go to someplace. And I'm going to read this here. It's in Genesis 44, verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to thy servant, my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life. Oh, you mean his son was wrapped all around him? He was kind of strapped to him? He was, you know, everywhere he went, the son was strapped to him. He couldn't, you know, could do anything. Is that what it means? No. Do you know who he's talking about? Who? Or who?
Talking about Jacob and Benjamin.
Yeah, talk about Benjamin and Jacob. Judah is the one that said this. Judah was... Okay, an example here. Look. What did Judah do when he finally had nothing else to do? If you become a surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands in a pledge for a stranger, if you have snared by the words of your mouth, you are taken by the words of your mouth. So do this, my son. Deliver yourself, for you have come into the hand when you come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself. That's exactly what Judah did. He humbled himself. To me, that's one of the great stories in the Bible where a man that was out to kill him and then said, "I'm going to make money out of him," he finally humbled himself. And I got kind of interesting, you know, looking at that. And when he read that, I said, I got to bring this one out. It's a fantastic analogy in one sense. All right. You know, and the other one, this is my opinion, okay, only my opinion. But once again, he goes into verse 19. You shall teach them your children, like bind them in your children's, what their hands do, what their work does. And bind within your children's mind what it is. Teach your children so it does not depart from their mind and from their heart and from their soul. Then he goes in, you know, about, by the way, the entry door. The doorpost upon the doorpost. Now, do you really think, excuse me, I'm going to be careful what I'm wording here. Do you think the statutes, the judgments, and the commandments of Devarim, Elohim, is on your doorpost? Or just a few little statements here and there? Nothing else. It's like, I'm going to pick this one. I'm going to put this on my doorpost. This is the one. I have chosen this one, God. And God says, do you understand what I mean on your doorpost? You're entering into your home. Their life should have, your entire home should be, not only your mind, your heart, and your spirit, but your physical surroundings should be, is centered around my charge. And if you own a piece of land and someone has to go through a gate, in your entire property, it must have my charge, my statutes, my judgments, my commandments. So it's bigger. So when we look at our lives and say, okay, which one, God, do I like? And we may say, well, I think I'll keep the Ten Commandments and put them into the wall. Maybe I'll bite those commandments I'll put on my doorpost. Okay. Is there anything else? Jeff.
I just was sitting here thinking about that, about binding to the doorpost, and thinking of it as a miniature of something bigger. Now, when I think of, it just made me think of the fact that many of the courts of elders of a city were held at the gates of the city.
Yes.
And that's where judgments were made, because it makes sense that if you were going to have judgments of, like, commerce and whatever, it would happen as things were going in or coming out of a city. So think about that as in the personal sense of your house. You are to make judgments. The word of God
is to be
the basis of your judgments of to what goes in and what comes out of your house. And it makes me think of something that the apostle said, take every thought captive and make it conform to the word of God.
Which is not, you know, it's not the icing on the cake either. You really have to work at it. You have to study it. And if you don't understand it, you've got to go to the Creator of heaven and earth. And He will teach you. And then you can explain it to your children the best that you know how. As we continue on now, he says, now, but if you do these things, your days will be multiplied. At the end of this 21, it's got an unusual statement. And it says, as the days of heaven upon the earth. Well, that means, in a biblically sense, is as long as time has been, the heaven is always above the earth. It's never the other way around. That's the order of things. And when you go into the land, my statutes, my ways, my judgments, my commandments will always be there above you on the entire land. They'll never come under your jurisdiction. They'll always be my statutes, my judgments, my commandments, my laws. They'll never be the other way around. That's kind of an interesting way of looking at it, right? And he said, now, he'll drive them out. God said, I will drive them out, those of the nations that are before you. Remember he said in the previous chapter? Moses said the Israelites, they were numbered as the, what? As the stars in heaven. And then he said, however, the nations you're going into are bigger. They outnumber you. They got more than you do. There are more people there. They're larger than you. You're kind of small, but you number the stars in heaven. I want to understand a little play on words, because Moses knew where it's heading. We're talking about 12 tribes. We won't go there and explain that again. You probably all know what that says. And he said now, verse 25, and no man will be able to stand before you, telling them that they cannot do it, because God, your Elohim, shall lay something upon them. What is he going to lay upon them? Did you get it here? That Elohim shall lay fear of you on them. It's not that you will lay fear upon them and they'll leave. No, I am going to lay fear upon them of you. Now, is it God taking action here? or just a bunch of Israelites just going in and take over land? God says, no, I'm going to bring the fear of you. Not the fear of God. Did you get that? Not the fear of me. Did you get that? But the fear of you. However, there's a stipulation to the fear of you, right? You already mentioned earlier, if you go to another Elohim, you're out of there just as fast as they are. So they had to have fear of God in the first place in order for them to be able to accomplish the charge that they were going to be in charge of, which the 12th chapter begins to tell us more in detail of what it is. As he said. And he gave a second warning one more time, this very same chapter, about going after another Elohim. If you do, it's bad news for you. And he names two mountains here. We won't go into these two mountains today. Dan did a very good job about going through those two mountains some time ago. But it's very fascinating here. Gerizim means cutting off. That's where the blessings were to be given. The mountain where the blessings were given, it was to be cut off. Oh, separating. Oh, something's being separated here. And the other mountain, Evel, means stone or a bare mountain. And we know that Joshua, in the 10th, I think it was 10th, no, 8th chapter, I think it was, built an altar on that mountain. You remember? And Daniel went through the reason why. Very fascinating. Somebody may have to go back. I'll ask Daniel about it and says, what did you say? Why that mountain? Why not the other one? The other mountain was lush, fertile. Things would grow on it. This one would not. The blessings were on the one that things grew. The curses were to be on the one that was bald. But an altar was built upon the bald one, not the one that's blessing. Something was going to happen. Okay. What was going to happen between those two mountains? Why did Moses say that to do that? It's kind of weird, doesn't it? I mean, right out here in the middle of Deuteronomy, you're right there, ready to go into the promised land. And now he says, but you know, there's two mountains over there. Did you see that one? And that one over there? Yeah. That one there? And that one over there? Yeah. Okay. That one blessed be on that one. And later on in the book of Deuteronomy tells what tribe goes up to what mountain to the blessing and what tribe goes up to the other mountain to do the cursing. Actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's Levites who do the cursing and the blessing, if I'm not mistaken. They're the ones who make the statement. I may be wrong there. I'll have to go, but we'll get there. We'll read it. And so we are here now at this point in time in the book of Deuteronomy at the end of the 11th chapter. And what have we learned up to this point? And we are not to serve what? Very, very important. How do you know in your mind, in your heart, in your soul, you are serving the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and are not another Elohim? How would you know that? Sorry, what? Okay. The one you fear, right? The one you walk in his ways, the one you love him, and the one that you serve him. Not one another, but him. What happens when he does that? Well, we look at the blessings, but he also gives us a curse in order to test us out, to find out if we really do and believe and trust him. He did that to all the house of Israel. And we're in the point where soon Daniel's going to be going into later on in the book of Samuel, and later on in the book of Samuel, or maybe Kings, where all of a sudden now something's going to happen to the house of Israel, the nation. And they're going to be torn apart. And guess who said he's responsible for it? God. This is of me. This is of me. I'm doing this. So when we see God's action in the Torah, we know this is what he thinks. We know this is how he acts. We know what he does. So therefore, if I listen to and hear his statutes, hear his judgments, hear his commandments, and I walk in them, I observe them, I take his charge, I know then I'm serving the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because he is the ultimate one that's in charge, and not me. So you have to kind of ask yourself, okay, what do I believe? Who do I worship? Do I have the right God? Have I departed? Now, this is a very important scripture here in the 11th chapter. I feel it's very, very important. Don't have a wide heart. Don't have an open mind. Guard it. Apostle Paul says, guard something. Guard your heart. That if you don't guard it, how do you guard it? What do you guard it with? Jevarim Elohim. That's what you guard it with. You go back to his word. Go back and back and back and say, what did he say? What did he say? What did he say? What did he say? Am I going to do it? 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 The next statement you say is, I am doing, I am doing, I am doing, and I am doing. Now had nothing to do with salvation. I said to you, I don't know, last week or 2 weeks ago, there are two forms of sanctification. That's why there's a quote, an Old Testament and a quote, a New Testament. There's two forms of sanctification. One of them is with the mind. The other is with the heart. Our mind must be completely understanding the charge, the statutes, the judgments, the commandments. When that's established, then the heart can be affected by it. And that's where the new commandment comes in, or the New Testament comes in, is I will write my laws, my Torah, on their mind. First thing he says, your mind, and then your heart. That's the order how God works. Straighten your mind up first. And you got that. Now I'm going to straighten up your heart. And you will not depart. Because the book of Deuteronomy, you'll see, Moses is quoting God, says, oh, if there were a heart in them. Now, we take that on a negative basis, that they didn't have a heart. No, they had a heart. They didn't have the enduring strength within them to keep it up. And Apostle Paul said, what did they lack? They lacked the spirit of the creator of heaven and earth to help them through and endure it and live it and to walk it and to be part of him, be part of his charge, be part of his statute, be part of his judgment. It's no longer of the judgments that we are kind of like we're within the statutes, within the judgments, we are within the commandments. We are part of it. We're part of God. We're part of this Jevarim Elohim.